This is side two of the May 8th interview with Dr. Wetmore, and you were talking about the Bureau of the Budget.
We were really just discussing the Bureau of Colorado Island and its financial situation. They had a certain income, but far from their needs, particularly with increasing costs, more and more and more interest in the place, more people wanted to go there. So the first thing that was done, it was set up as a, by Act of Congress, as an entity, but still with no money. So Dr. Barber and I thought something should be done about this, so we got the Bureau of the Budget to submit an authorization for an appropriation. And it was denied in Congress. It would be a special act, of course, that didn't pass. We got it through the Bureau of the Budget three different times. Still, there was feeling they just won't undertake it. And the Bureau of the Budget decreed that the thing should not stand as it was in the situation, but should be turned over to the Smithsonian Institution. In other words, it came to us, we had to do something about it. And that was its beginning under the institution. Strictly as an orphan, with no special funds. But time took care of that. It's been a very successful operation. Completely so. I'm sorry, my voice is bad today.
That's okay, and I think we'll, bring this to a conclusion here, because I don't want to overtax you here.
Let me take another one of these things. It would help me a little bit. Honey and lemon.
Sounds good.
They're very good.
Well, you'll need that sunshine in Virginia Beach tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, let's just, I don't know how we can sort of sum up what we've talked about. We've talked about a lot of different things. Maybe if you would just give a personal feeling about what it has been like, what it has meant for you to have been associated with the Smithsonian for these years.
Well, it's been a tremendous thing. Of course, I've had this association more from the time I finished my work at the universities. Mm-hmm. Came here to Washington. I've been really part of the Smithsonian all that time. Of course, when I came on the staff, somewhat to my surprise, that became closer and closer as time went on until it really, this has been, it's been a wonderful experience for me. I enjoyed the administrative contact for a number of years, and I say when I felt it was necessary, both for me and for the institution to get out, I was allowed to remain here and carry on my research and writing, and also to travel more or less in the name of the Smithsonian, and it's been really my life. Of course, I've been practicing my whole life because I came into contact with the institution in my early 1920s. In other words, I've had something over 50 years of close association here.
Did you never think of leaving? Were there ever opportunities when you could have gone somewhere else?
No, never thought of leaving here. I did consider going elsewhere when I was in the Biological Survey. I traveled widely for them, made various studies for them in the field, and research of various kinds, but I kept completely away from any administrative responsibilities other than those that concerned my own work.
Yes.
It was too under the, it was too tied down, it was impossible. And finally came to a point when I couldn't afford it any further. And I was offered an opportunity here at the Smithsonian, so I decided then I could, I knew the administration here, I knew that I could get along with that happily, and so I made the change.
It is often said that the Smithsonian is almost a magical place, that there's a certain special quality about things that are associated with the Smithsonian. Did you ever feel in your experiences that you were directly benefited by that kind of special consideration?
Definitely. No question of that, whatever. That feeling has always been with me. And but the old days, in the traveling for agriculture, we were under a $5 per diem. And I regularly estimated in my plans for travel losing a dollar a day, instead of spending a dollar more when I traveled in this country. When travel, foreign travel, I always had at least $2 more, sometimes more than that. And that was it. Sometimes some of the things are very amusing. I traveled a year for the biological survey in southern South America after the passage of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Uh-huh.
There was no information available whatever as to what happened to our migrant birds that got down into that part of the country. And my assignment was to go down there and see what I could learn. Of course, at the same time, I had a wonderful opportunity to study the local species of birds that were resident there.
Yes.
I began in the Chaco in Paraguay and continued down through Argentina down to into northern Patagonia. Yeah, very interesting. It was wild. I was in wild country a good bit of the time. And in the Chaco, I went up and I had a contact with a huge American ranching operation up in the northern Paraguay. And I went up there, that area. They had a station out 80 kilometers west of the river, west of the Paraguay River. There was a little railroad running up to it, and they allowed me to locate there. And I lived there for over a month. And from there, I went further back into Chaco, into the Indian country, where, well, the boys, teenagers, told me they'd heard of white men, they'd never seen one before. Things like that. It was that type of country. And so I enjoyed that thoroughly, I can assure you.
In more recent years, as governments began to grow and become more active and political things became more controversial, in your travels, did you ever find yourself in difficulties because of a political situation? Or did you have a special status as a scientist and as a Smithsonian scientist?
I was traveling for the Smithsonian, for the U.S. government. I never let matters of that kind interfere. I got into Argentina. That was 1920, soon after the war. Of course, Argentina had been pro-German,
mm-hmm.
and I was far from an American traveling alone. I was far from popular in many, many country areas. But when the people would tell me that, I said, "Well, what do you expect to do about it?" Of course, I had my authorities, my identification of who I was and what I was doing. I said, wouldn't you expect to do anything about it? And they said, no, they didn't think they would. I said, thank you. But I had the official recognition of their government. Mm-hmm. Just individuals only.
Right.
Through the country.
That gave you safe passage. Well, it seems to me that you've had
several times. Of course, I was traveling officially for this government, getting this information. Now, it was received in a very friendly way by the officialdom in Buenos Aires. I established contacts with them through the American embassy there. No difficulty whatever there. And they gave me my authorities, the identification as to who I was and what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And various times I get into a new area, I would call on the officials, whatever they were, present my papers, tell them what I planned to do, and they were cooperating. Occasionally I'd be told, we don't care much for men like you traveling down here. And I said, I understand that. I said, do you expect to do anything about it? And they said, no. Thank
you. You went about your business. Well, it seems to me you've had really a very exciting, adventuresome career.
Well, I had a good bit of fun. I enjoyed it in every way. Of course, while I was getting this information on our migrant birds, to get down there for the winter, spend our cold weather season, I was at the same time at wonderful opportunity for making studies and collections of the native species.
And this is really where you began to develop your specialty and your special interest.
No.
No?
That is, since I was 15 or 16 years
I
old.
I see. I see. I don't think I asked you this before. What prompted you to become interested in birds as a young person?
Well, I've always been interested in them. Yes. So I was 5 years old.
Yes? They just fascinated you.
Well, my father was a physician.
Yes.
And I thought I'd followed his footsteps. I got up into beginning my university life. I could see then that there was a livelihood in the scientific work that hadn't occurred to me before, so I gave up the other completely.
Because this was what you really wanted to do. Well, I think that's fine. Do you have anything more you'd like to add? Otherwise, I think we might
Well,
conclude.
Nothing, I guess. Some of this this travel was very, very interesting. I went back from the Paraguay River back to this ranch center, and from there back into 2 days travel back into the Indian country in Chaco, and I got back enough finally where they boys told me they'd heard of white men, never seen one before. And I enjoyed that very much.
How did they treat you as somebody they'd never seen?
Well, you had to be a little careful.
Yeah.
And no difficulty.
What about more recent years? Did you always travel alone? Did you travel alone?
Well, I was traveling alone then, not entirely. I was completely alone there.
Yeah.
And, traveling, no one associated with me. I had other people, of course, but nobody directly is part of what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, these experiences are certainly very interesting and very, very exciting, really. And perhaps on a future occasion we can have a session just talking about your travels, which would be very worthwhile.
Some of the amusing parts of it.
right, that would be very worthwhile. But I think that's enough for today, and I thank you very much.